This is the Oil and Gas Startups Podcast, where we showcase emerging technology and the stories of industry founders, investors, and leaders with your hosts, Jake Corley and Colin McClelland.
What's going on, Digital Wildcatters? Welcome back to another week of Oil and Gas Startups Podcast. Got a really good episode this week with Jim and Tad over at Riot Edge Solutions. And this one's special because you guys are coming hot off the press a few weeks ago, taking the Midland Energy Tech Night Championship. So y'all are riding high right now.
I'm still eating the popcorn that was pouring over my head. So
it was really fun. It amazed us how much energy was in that room.
Yeah, you know, that's Energy Tech Nights are just a really special event. Yeah. Just the people that are in the room, and it's high energy, and you know, you guys were the fan favorite and won, and so, you know, that's a big accomplishment to go into Midland and take home the hardware. So congrats to you guys,
especially against artificial intelligence guys.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
all we're doing selling tank level modules. Yeah.
You know, the AI guys are the hot and sexy thing, right? And so, you know, you guys did the thing. And, you know, tell us real quick, 40,000 foot view. What is Riot?
Riot is a company for the industrial IoT business. You know of IoT.
Yeah.
Well, this is the industrial version. And the industrial version means you have to go out in the middle of an oil field and still work. Your laptop does not work in the middle of an oil field because it'll bake in the sun or freeze to death. One of the two, we have to work at minus 40, we have to work at minus 50, and probably truthfully plus 70.
Yeah.
So working in that, laying in the sun for 3 years, it still has to be working.
Yeah.
And that's how you differentiate IoT from industrial IoT.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And this is one of the things the artificial intelligence guys learned. They take all this data and analyze it. Well, in the oil field, there isn't a lot of data because there's no network connections in an oil field.
Yeah.
So we made a device that screws in the top of a tank and broadcasts the signal 10 miles.
Oh, awesome.
Okay. So you can get data from the pad to headquarters where they got the shiny glass windows and the 52 displays, and you know, it's 68 degrees.
Yeah. Or it's nice and
that's
comfy,
right.
Huh?
And then they'll tell you, you know, what you should be doing next. And you're shaking your head like, who taught you the right data algorithm?
So edge computing, you know, this is an interesting topic to me because, you know, in oil and gas, not even that long ago, it was like 2018, you know, everything had to be on-prem. It was all on-prem servers, and oil and gas companies didn't want to do anything with the cloud. And then they started going to the cloud, but then you're starting to see things start migrating, you know, to edge computing. And, you know, engineers are, you know, I got a call from a friend at an EMP out in West Texas the other day. He's like, hey, do you know what's the latest and greatest edge computing solutions out there? You know, we've got this command center for our water operations, and we're trying to do, you know, just more analytics and surveillance on site. So, you know, this is it seems like it's a pretty fast moving part of the industry, and it's pretty exciting too, just with the different capabilities that we'll have.
Yeah, that way back then there was not much internet, there was no much network connectivity. Now you can't even go to the oil field. Everything's lit up. So that's one of the other benefits. And now we can afford to bring all the devices to that edge.
Yeah. So. And it really is crazy too. You know, it's with things like Starlink and just better communications across the board. We can just do a lot.
Yes.
A lot
there's more. Still one of the things people don't understand is to interpret the data from a sensor, you need a lot of compute horsepower.
Yeah.
So we have three microprocessors inside our sensor. Before it sends a small signal 10 miles across town so the engineers can do their analytics.
Yeah.
So
you
have to do a lot of computing. But the interesting thing is we only have a C-cell battery in our unit.
Really?
And you want it to run 5 years.
Yeah.
So we have to know how to turn on, do the right compute without eating a battery, turn it back off, do 40,000 readings in those 5 years, and call it a day. And that's one of the beauties of the technology we're using.
Yeah, this isn't trivial to make
it
all of these
not trivial
happen. And so, you know, before we I have a few more questions for you on the topic of the tech, but before we do that, you know, tell me, you know, when was Riot started? You know, Jim, what's your background? And Tad, would love to hear about yourself too. Just tell me a little bit about yourselves and the company.
So anyway, we'll start before Riot. We came out of the semiconductor industry. It turns out Thad also worked in the semiconductor industry.
Up in Silicon Valley.
Okay.
We did all the fancy software to model the semiconductors. And believe it or not, after about the 50th pass of that, it starts to get boring. And a friend of mine came along and said, hey, we're doing IoT. I'm like, isn't the rest of the world doing IoT? No, this is industrial IoT, and the IoT guys don't know how to do industrial IoT. So here we are, 2018, fast forward. We started with a project where a contract manufacturer came to us and said, hey, one of our customers wants these sensors that go in the tanks out in the oil field. Do you know anything about that? Could you possibly build us one? So that's what we worked on building. It took us a couple years to build it.
Yeah.
The case itself, which is in my bag, I just remembered.
Oh, you got one with you?
Yeah.
I'll pull it out. I want
to
see it.
It's impervious.
Hold on. We're going to let Jim pull out his bag real quick because I want to see this thing.
The bad boy. So here you go.
Hold that up for this camera to see.
Here you go. And the most interesting thing about this sensor, which we really can't see there, but this is a thread at the end here.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a 1-inch MPT thread, which for non-oil and gas guys, that's for plumbing.
Okay.
Thad, leave it there.
Yeah, this is what I'm looking at this, and it looks just like a plumbing PVC thread. This is pretty cool. I like getting to see hardware on the show. Glad that you
got hardware. It fits in the palm of your hand. There's three microprocessors in there that less than probably two decades ago filled up a computer room.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty.
And it's running on a C-Val battery.
Yeah. And so we got this this connection here. So you know, depending, I mean, this seems like it could be universal for any tank because they can just nipple down to fit that thread.
Exactly. So if you listen to the IoT guys, we're going to have more devices than sand. Mm-hmm. Right. The problem is we don't have more hands than sand to install these. So we actually thought about the physical world it went into.
Yeah.
So the key was that if you're going to put 3,000 or 10,000 of these in the field, I don't have a 3-year plan to do this.
Yeah.
So we want a guy to walk up, screw it in the top of the tank.
Yeah.
Push a button on an app, activate the thing and walk away.
Oh, wow.
So you have a 2-minute install. You can install thousands of these now.
I've got some home electronics that are more burdensome to install than
you
that.
Have no idea. And being tech guys, we always go, well, what does everyone else do in their house, right?
Yeah. So that's pretty interesting. So, you know, for you guys, for Riot, you guys, it sounds like y'all don't have any field technicians, that you're selling these to oil and gas companies and saying, hey, you know, your pumper can go out there and install these things. Tell me a little bit about y'all's operation.
That's correct.
Okay.
Very, very astute. And to notice the difference, because a lot of our competitors require calibration and battery maintenance and, you know,
you got the 3-hour install.
Yeah.
You got the battery died after 6 months. So let's send the tech out to fix it. Mm-hmm. So the key is, if you're going to have as many grains of sand, you can't have a field support organization.
Well, I mean, you have this entire support system that you need to maintain these devices, right? And so that's something really important to think about, is that, I've got to hire, you know, technicians or pumpers just to maintain these things. And so what you're saying is, hey, we've got this 5-year battery life on this thing, so low maintenance.
Let it rip.
Change it out.
And the hard part for Thad and I is, sold this $1 million software. And the reason you pay $1 million for the software, it's always broken. And you always got 10 people around it to fix it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we install this and, you know, being a nervous guy, you realize no one's calling us. no one's calling us.
So it's too quiet.
So we start calling. Hey, how you doing? Yeah. How's my sensor doing?
Yeah.
Oh, it's doing just great, Jim. It works just perfectly. Yeah. And after about 3 years now, we're sort of getting used to it, but we feel lonely at times.
Yeah.
We're like the Maytag guy. You know? No one's calling us.
Yeah. So sometimes you're like, man, I wish people would call us just to check in.
Actually, we had a guy, we were talking earlier today. They had a network outage by the cellular guy. So we talked to a gateway, and the gateway talks to the network, which gets you to your back office, right?
Yeah.
Well, the network went out for the cell company.
Yeah.
And they were up on a hill with one of these sensors. And 42 miles away down the valley, the sensor talked to that gateway, which was still on the air. It wasn't part of the outage.
Oh, geez.
So we were able to get that
still thing. Bridge over.
And that's when they called me. Jim, we want to tell you this. You went 42 miles.
That's crazy. So yeah, let's talk about that a little bit. Just kind of mapping this out. So we have this this one sensor right here on the table. You know, it's hooked up to a tank, and then there's a gateway that it's talking to, and then that gateway is connecting to a network and transmitting that information back to Houston or the corporate office. And so this gateway, you know, essentially you're kind of building this mesh network out in the field, right, where all of these devices are talking to each other. What is that gateway device? What does that look like? You know, for someone like me that's not an IoT guy.
Yeah, first of all, we don't do mesh.
Okay.
Well, the problem with mesh is everything has to be talking to each other, which means we always have to be on.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to be on a C-cell battery for 5 years.
Got you. So this is this is on intermittently and once an hour. Okay.
For a half a second.
Got you. Yeah, so the device itself is actually not on.
The device is not on, but to your point, you wanted to talk about the gateway.
Yeah.
The gateway has a couple antennas on it so they can pick up our signal. It might be up a pole somewhere. It doesn't need to be that high off the ground. You have to deal with the curvature of the earth, but fine.
Yeah.
It sets its parameters. It knows it's in the U.S., so there's U.S. frequencies, there's European frequencies, so you do all those little selections. There's about 8 selections, and then you send the data off.
Cool. Is there a limitation on how many of these devices can hook up to a gateway?
Well, everyone keeps asking us the question since we have the most number of sensors per gateway. One of the manufacturers says there's a limit of 500.
Okay.
But we're going to probably test that a little later this year.
See if you can push that bound.
We can push that bound.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, if you're on for 400 milliseconds, less than a half a second,
yeah,
once an hour, how many sensors can you support?
Yeah. I mean, you can just cycle them, right?
So right.
They're on different schedules. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's an interesting point. Yeah. And it seems like that would give you plenty of top range to hook up as many as you need in one field.
It's interesting. There's this organization called LoRaWAN. So it's an open frequency.
Okay.
It's certified by the FCC. You have to meet certain certifications. But in that open frequency, they went after the low data business. You know, we're not shipping video. I'm going to tell you how much liquid's in a tank.
Yeah.
How much data you need for that, right?
Yeah.
So if you design that frequency band for low data, that's how you get 5 years out of a battery.
Okay.
Because people keep coming by and say, you know, there's a cell tower over there. All I got to do is screw this thing in and have it talking to my cell tower, right? Well, cell towers used to stream in video or listen to you and I talk. They just suck up a lot of power.
Yeah.
And the two never match.
Mm-hmm.
They never come together. In fact, our cell phones have about the same battery size as the unit that's in our device. This lasts 5 years. Your cell phone will last a day.
Yeah.
Maybe two if you don't use it.
Yeah. You know what's interesting about this to me is I bought these oil wells up in Oklahoma back in 2018, and they're a little bit east of Tulsa. And so, you know, just geographically speaking, I'm not very close to them being down here in Houston. And had this old man pumper that worked for me, and great guy, you know, worked his whole life in oil and gas. But, you know, he'd go out there, you know, once a week or so. And, you know, what was, Jake and I always talked about. It's like, man, it'd be awesome to have this automated to where we can get our tanks gauged and checked automatically and sent to us, you know, not even once a day. These are little stripper wells, you know, doing two barrels a day.
Yeah.
It's not like I'm filling up a tank right. every day, but it's like, you know, once every 3 days, 5 days, whatever it may be. And we even took it a step further. It's like, actually, there's this company doing this now, which is funny, but we're like, if we had a drone that would fly around the lease, take some pictures, turn it into a GIF, and then transmit that to us, go back to its little garage and charge. And there's actually this company out of Israel that's doing that now. And anyways, and so we always saw this vision of being able to have this automated reporting of tanks and facilities on the lease. But just back in 2018, the technology didn't exist, and especially didn't exist where it was cost effective for a little, you know, four barrel a day operation to do something. And so it's funny now. I saw someone on Twitter the other day post that they're an independent operator, small mom and pop, and they hooked up Ring cameras out on their location, and they're getting, anytime, you know, someone pulls up on location, and they're able to monitor it. And so I love the oil field because the oil field is super resourceful and
right.
and will rig up things. And so this is I just know I have a ton of friends already that are going to listen to this and say, oh man.
Yeah, we're moving into a new era with this IoT products. We're replacing some of the dedicated high cost sensing products with proprietary network capabilities, replacing that with an open standard LoRa standard.
Mm-hmm.
Which basically lays down the lore, I call it the freeway, in which case then anything else could be put onto it, you know, a contact switch, even a mousetrap.
Yeah.
We'll talk for free on the LoRa network, but yeah. you put the infrastructure in, but that's our premise, is that that's, we can get, you know, hundreds and thousands of sensors on a single gateway. Yeah. It's just distance restrictions.
So tell me, you know, for some clarification, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, the size of operators that may be listening right. to this. You know, you have everyone from the majors to the larger independents, like the Diamondbacks, all the way to the, you know, one person mom and right. pops. You know, for y'all and y'all's business model, does this scale across a spectrum to any size of operator?
Absolutely. So that was part of our design. Because when they said, hey, we got all these tanks out by the well that need monitoring. So we did a little research, and there's these guys with really expensive sensors, realizing the sensor was costing more than all the chemicals and the tank and the pump and everything yeah. combined.
Yeah.
And no one could afford to do that. So that was part of our criteria, is we had to design something that could, the smallest tank we probably do is totes that are 40 or 50 gallons.
Wow, that's way smaller than I was anticipating.
And
I was thinking smallest is going to be, you know, a tank battery on a location, you know, a 100 barrel tank. And so you guys are actually going down to like chemical totes.
These are chemical totes. Typically on the pad, it's a 4 foot high poly tank with 100 gallons in it.
Okay.
Chemicals.
Yeah.
And yeah. they spend millions of dollars on chemicals.
Yeah.
And they have no idea what's going on out there.
Yeah.
So we first built this to do like the truck runs.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause the worst thing you could do is have one of these expensive chemicals out there and you don't leave it all on site because all the tanks weren't empty.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can't exactly take that back home again.
Yeah.
So you have to find somewhere to put it. So that's a big problem.
Yeah.
So they approached us about all the transportation stuff.
Yeah.
But there's more important stuff now about my chemistry in my well and how I improve my productivity.
Yeah.
And just recently, there was a new feature, is produce water.
Mm-hmm.
For example, in the San Joaquin Valley, that produced water is fresh water, not the stuff you have down here.
Nice.
And that fresh water, we had a drought 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The farmers were in trouble. So they were able to put this water back in the ground through the percolating tables. And the farmers loved the oil guys for putting clean water back in the ground.
That's pretty fascinating. I haven't heard about that. I need to go research into that because that's an awesome story to tell.
It is.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah. Now, Chevron often says they're a water company. Yeah. Oh, and we produce oil.
Well, yeah. You know, it's funny. Those wells that I owned, one of them did 200 barrels of water a day and 2 barrels of oil. It's like, this is
well,
a water well
that produces some oil.
Yeah. And so, man, yeah, that's a fascinating story. If y'all are able to put me in contact with anyone that was involved with that, would love to talk to them.
Okay.
But, yeah. So is that where you're attacking the market is in the chemical totes? Is that the,
our focus was the abandoned market, right? If you're a big sensor company, in fact, one of the big sensor companies show up with the $750,000 RV with all their sensors glitzy.
Yeah,
in it.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah.
Jim shows up carrying this in his backpack.
That's right. Exactly.
I love it.
Yeah.
So, you know, for y'all, you said that there's an app that goes along with it where activates the sensor. Tell me a little bit about this app. You know, are companies using it to just activate the sensors, or is there an integration to where they need to be able to hook up these devices to feed whatever, you know, systems that they're using internally? Tell me a little bit about the software component of it.
So the app is straightforward. It's part of the activation. It's also part of the diagnostics. I mean, let's face it, when you're putting thousands in the field, you got to do some diagnostics. And 90% of the time, that diagnostics is trying to figure out what's wrong with the rest of the neighbor network. But if you can't start at the sensor, you can't get this done. So that's what we're doing. We can do diagnostics. We can tell the temperature. You know what the temperature's in the tank. We can tell the tilt. We've recently been approached for the tank farms. You know, they got floating lids.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if it rains and the lid tilts.
Mm.
Then you're getting water on top of your oil and
yeah, it starts throwing.
So yeah. They want to use our sensor just to measure the tilt. So we have tilt in here. And part of the tilt is part of this, how do we scale something? Because someone's going to cross-thread this thing and the sensor will be in cockeyed, or they put the lid on sideways, you know. And then
you got some hand like me out there that's cross-threads better than no thread. just get it on there.
Where's my hammer?
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
That's a, you know, it's funny talking about industrial light IoT just because, I mean, we laugh about it, but it's like, I mean, you get some roughneck like me out there and it's like, dude, they're just going to break this shit trying to, you know, get it in. So you have to make it just dummy proof to make it install.
So I'll show your audience one other thing. See that?
Yeah.
That's a 30 degree angle.
Okay.
So customers will call me and say, your sensor stopped working. I said, what's the tilt? 30 degrees. Go in the guy's office and get the sensor off his desk. So small totes that they may train in and out. The guy might have put this on his truck, got halfway home and realized it's sitting in the back of his pickup truck.
Yeah.
And he put it on his desk and he forgot about it.
Yeah, he's getting that 30 degree. Yeah.
So that's one of my key features. Yeah.
That's one of your diagnostic features that you built in.
And you have to do that, right?
Yeah, I love it.
I mean, there's 50 ways from tomorrow of getting the wrong answer.
Yeah. That's pretty funny and clever. Yeah, so, you know, for you guys coming into the oil and gas industry from the semiconductor industry, you know, what have been some of the biggest learnings from y'all? You know, I'm just kind of curious to hear, you know, from a personal, you know,
well, there's this industry. Well, we remarked how far we've come in the last 2 years, and we knew about calling into the majors like the Exxons and Shells, and now we know all of them, all the people now, and the funnest thing, I think, is the camaraderie we found with all the small vendors like DC3 and the pump guys. It's just been everybody's so nice to work with here in this industry. learning the constructs of what a well does, how the water comes out, what the mixture ratios.
Yeah.
It's from electrical engineering to chemical / petroleum engineering. The stuff we've learned over the last 2 years has just been phenomenal.
Yeah. You know, I have a friend that came to Houston from California. He's a tech guy, data scientist. And when he got here, his remark was, he's like, I can't believe how friendly everyone is in oil and gas and just wants to help out and answer questions.
They
and
need build. Help.
And so, yeah. And so,
but the answer to your question more directly, how's it different? One of the things we were able to do is there's microprocessors in here, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's also radios and there's sensor technology at the other end. And there's knowledge of what you're going to do with this device. And we were able to put those people together to make you an awesome product. Like,
yeah,
we have an engineer that knows how to do satellite communications. So we applied this to the radio. And one of the things everyone worried about is you roughnecks. What can you break off? And one of the first objections we got to this device was, where's your external antenna?
Mm-hmm.
And we said, if you design the radio correctly, you don't use an external antenna. And I actually had to point to their cell phone. And we had done a bunch of cell phone work. And they said, well, that's because it's cute. I said, no, there isn't a cell phone company out there that allow you to put phone on their network that doesn't work, because the network gets blamed when it's disconnected, not the phone.
Yeah.
So yeah. You have to know how to design the antenna. So we had that capability.
Yeah.
And then we had, we actually used a high-end microprocessor technique to get the unit to start at minus 40. So our first testing at minus.
Yeah, let's. I want to talk about like the thermodynamics and the weather,
right.
Weather conditions of this. So go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. So at minus 40, most products don't work. We specifically pick parts that work at minus 40. So we got out there and it didn't work at minus 40.
And is this minus 40 Fahrenheit?
C.
Okay.
Oh, Celsius. By the way, your high school chemistry class. Minus 40 C and minus 40 F is the same thing.
Oh, is it? I didn't know that.
Okay. There you go.
I learned something.
There you go. Right. So that's the only
thing. So my question was an ill-informed question. All right.
Well, that's a fun question. We can remind each other what the answer was.
Hey, I won't forget that.
No, that's
I
right.
I always know that Jim taught me that.
Until the next time.
Yeah, that's right.
Anyway, so thing wouldn't start at minus 40. So we use some techniques that you use in high performance microprocessors to get this thing to start.
Okay.
But no one would think about that if they didn't have the guys with these backgrounds, and we have the diverse backgrounds to build a device that does just this.
Yeah.
So that's minus 40.
What are the limitations? You know, it sounds like, you know, minus 40 on the cold end. How does the thing do in West Texas, out in the
just
desert?
Wonderful. Actually, the semiconductor industry does have components that deal in high temperature.
Mm-hmm.
And you just got to make sure you make your device with high temperature devices. The biggest thing that fails at high temperature is the case.
Oh, really?
The case, you know, that shattered plastic look.
Yeah.
Or it just falls apart.
Yeah.
How one of the competitors down the street from one of our largest customers picked this was 3 years driving down the road. He kept seeing these sensors on top of these tanks, and they still look brand new. And he says, I got to find out who those guys are.
Yeah. Aesthetics go a long way, right?
Right,
it just
right.
looks good.
Exactly.
The label's got to be on it. It's, you can't let the sun and the rain take the decals, and it's material will hold up to anything.
Interesting. What's the reason for the labels needing to be on, just for part replacement, or is there any requirement?
So that's a very special, we have two versions of the sensor. That's a C1D1 sensor.
Okay.
So it's for hazardous areas, intrinsically safe.
Yeah.
And everything is screwed down literally in that device, the spec-wise. If we spec a label that has round corners on it like it does, we can't put a square corner label on there. And they specify the material so you know that's a C1D1 device and no one's guessing 3 years down the road because the sun faded the amateur or the label came off. So
got you.
The label is specified by the C1D1 people, the type of ink that's used on there, and the glossiness, and you can't smear that ink. And then the two labels on the side, one in French and one in English. We got to take care of our friends in Canada. Although I don't think there's any oil wells in Quebec.
Yeah. As I say, I've worked with lots of Canadian field hands, and I didn't take them for the type that were, you know, fluent in French.
Right.
Well, this is, yeah, this is awesome, guys. You know, you guys won Midland Energy Tech Night for a reason. You know, people are excited about what y'all were working on. You know, closing out this podcast, what's y'all's asked anyone that's listening? You know, you got lots of oil and gas folks on here. I mean, are you obviously you're looking to sell some of these units, but you know,
well, we're moving into a transition phase in this monitoring space, because all the majors now are doing what they call decoupling. They want to take away, take the data that is usually controlled by the chemical suppliers and very rarely given to them because they use it to supply chemicals to track their chemicals, but they want the data. So all the majors, Exxon, Shell, ConocoPhillips, are all moving to have them be the ownership of the data. And then, you know, the sensors can be installed by somebody else, but that decoupling of them owning the data.
Mm-hmm.
And because the data is what really makes a difference. And it also drives what they call AI. So that is happening right now. So Shell, Exxon, ConocoPhillips, they're all putting in LoRa networks into their field because they can now. So that this is, and then it's happening this quarter.
Right now. Love it.
We hope.
Timely. Yeah. I hope so. So
it's been a long road.
Oh no.
3 years we've been, they've been talking about it. And it's all of them popped in just like this week. We were talking to all three of them. And they're like, yes, we're going to do it.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's a good talking point. Everything is a long road when you're building technology and companies. Yep. And, you know, sometimes those are internal factors. Sometimes they're external factors. You can only make the market and other companies go as fast as you want. And so got to have a little bit of perseverance to slog along with that. But you know, I've watched this industry, since 2010, I've been in it, but on the tech side, 2018 is like when I really started paying attention. And, you know, things moved really slowly pre-COVID, and then post-COVID, you know, things are accelerating a little bit. And, you know, just the way we opened up this podcast was talking about kind of the move to edge computing, and people are starting to understand what can be done, you know, at the asset level out in the field. And so it's a really, I think it's going to be a space that continues to get traction and accelerate over at least the next, you know, 5 to 10 years. So, you know, if anyone's listening to the show, where can they find Riot? You know, what's y'all's website? Where are y'all hanging out on the internet?
We are RiotEdgeSolutions.com.
Awesome. RiotEdgeSolutions.com.
You will find us on LinkedIn. You will find Thad all over LinkedIn.
All right. So Thad's over on LinkedIn. Also, y'all's video on Energy Tech Night will be on Collide Pro, and we are launching Collide Pro in a few weeks. So by the time this podcast comes out, Collide Pro should be out there, and you guys can go search Riot, and y'all's presentation from Energy Tech Night will come up.
That was a great time.
It was fun.
They had a lot of people there, a lot of the right people there, you know, and people all got along. They had some fun. Yeah. As I mentioned, I had to eat some popcorn at the end.
I just figured.
It came off the top
I
of my head.
I figure at minimum, as long as everyone had a good time, it's worth it.
But the important thing is the right people were there.
Yeah.
They listened.
Yeah.
And
Jim's just saying the right people are there because they voted for him to win. So see how you work.
When they send a couple of PRs.
All right, everyone. If highly suggest checking out Riot. Super cool technology. I'm getting to sit here and hold the sensor in my hand. So go check them out. We'll drop a link. Go to Collide Pro and search up their video from Energy Tech Night.